Coming up next on Tech News Today, Marissa Mayer will be out when the Verizon-Yahoo deal closes. Also, Waymo is creating its own full-stack solution for self-driving vehicles. Someone stole Razer's Project Valerie 3 screen laptop prototypes at the Consumer Electronics Show. The iPhone was announced 10 years ago today. So much has changed in 10 years. And the great phone swap of 2017 is upon us. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1679, recorded Monday, January 9th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process. It's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about everything that you need to know about technology today. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. I'm feeling it.
You're feeling it?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I looked and I realized my shirt matches the backdrop.
Oh, yeah. Is that a new shirt?
No.
Oh, it's nice.
But it matches, and that was unintentional, but I like it.
Just another reason to watch and not just listen, yes. People.
Oh, wow. That's a huge reason, too. Mm-hmm. If you've been holding out, now's your time to mm-hmm. hop in there and watch.
And my black dress matches my soul.
It and everything. Black just kind of matches everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're gonna blend into the background or the foreground. Really doesn't matter. I think we've talked enough about fashion. Let's talk about tech news. Because that's what we're here for. Verizon's Yahoo acquisition is nowhere near a done deal at this point, but an SEC filing today by Yahoo revealed a few key details about what to expect if and when that deal takes place. First, Yahoo CEO Marissa Mayer will resign from Yahoo's board of directors, along with co-founder David Filo and four other board members, if that deal takes place. Also, as Verizon will be purchasing Yahoo's core business, the remaining investment company that won't be going to Verizon will be renamed I almost said it wrong. It's like instinctive to say it wrong. Altaba, which kind of sounds like it could be Altbaba because in a former life it was Alibaba. Anyways, of course, all of this hinges on Yahoo actually following through with its purchase, or Verizon following through on its purchase of Yahoo's core business.
So before we get to the fact that Marissa Mayer is leaving the board, even though they said that she probably wouldn't, I need to stop at the name Altaba. Altaba.
Altaba.
Altaba.
It's Altaba.
The only thing worse would be Altbaba.
Although I really like the sound of Altbaba better than Altaba. I don't know why. It just has a nice ring to it.
I don't think she'd ever have, Altaba. I don't know. It's just dumb. And we've had a year of dumb names like Tronk, and I'm tired of it. Think before you name people.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, really, when you consider where the name is coming from, right? Chinese e-commerce business, Alibaba, that was a huge part of what Yahoo held a primary stake in. That's the piece that's not going to Verizon. So it makes sense. It's kind of like a winky face, right? Like, it's not Alibaba, it's Altaba. It's the alternative Alibaba. Mm-hmm. So I guess it makes sense, but it kind of sounds not serious.
Right.
Like, if I hadn't seen this from a number, like a bunch of different news sources, I would think that it was a joke.
Mm-hmm. I would as well. Like, yeah, you could see the SEC filing. Like, that's how you know it's real.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I have some questions too. Like, does Marissa Mayer stay if they don't sell? Because as you mentioned, like, they might not sell because Verizon might not want them because of all the hacks.
For now, I mean, I would guess so. I mean, barring any other plans, we haven't really heard, and we haven't even heard that Verizon won't necessarily be buying Yahoo. But obviously, there have been a lot of reasons why something as relates to the deal might be altered. There were a number of things that happened particularly in the last half of last year, security related, you know, discoveries that have all significantly, you know, have the potential of having a huge effect on whether Verizon goes through with it or whether they pay less or whatever. Verizon really isn't saying at this point whether it's considering kind of pulling out or what it wants to do. But I would imagine, yeah, if the deal doesn't go through, I don't think Marissa Mayer goes anywhere unless they have another announcement to make.
Yeah. Well, leading up to the opening of the North American Auto Show in Detroit, John Krafcik from Google's Waymo showed off an entirely new sensor suite for its self-driving minivans that are set to hit the streets for test drives this month. Now, Waymo spun off from Alphabet last month. It's now officially a standalone company, and they've partnered with Chrysler Fiat to start testing minivans on the streets of Phoenix, Arizona and Mountain View, California. Engineer, analyst, and self-driving car expert and frequent guest on our show, Sam Abul-Samid, says Waymo has the potential to be one of the most important players in the future of the auto industry in coming years. So all the tech for these cars is going to be produced in-house, and it's going to be engineered to be full automation. So none of this, like what Tesla's doing, easing us into it. It's going to be full automation. The cars are on display for attendees of the North American Auto Show now.
I mean, what this does, it gives, you know, Alphabet by extension of Waymo access to the full self-driving stack, top to bottom. Engineers that are working, you know, in-house to create all these components, artificial intelligence engineers to be close to how the hardware is being developed, so that the software, like, it's all tightly driven. It's kind of like the Apple approach in some ways, where Apple has this very tight ecosystem and its devices play very nice together because of that. Top to bottom, it's all built with everything else in mind. And yeah, I would imagine as we enter this kind of new phase of the automobile industry over the next 10 years, that could give Waymo a huge leg up, aside from the fact that they're owned by a company, you know, called Alphabet, that has insane amounts of money and lots of resources. But there's also talks here about Waymo considering potentially selling these kits and working in partnerships with automotive companies to kind of bring to port these kits over. And that's kind of a big deal, too.
Mm-hmm. And for the record, even though I did make fun of this name, it is Waymo better than Altbaba or Altava.
See, you did it now. See, it's hard not to do it. I really think they should have gone with Altbaba. Yeah, so I don't know. What do you think? Do you think your next vehicle someday could be a Waymo ride that you don't own the vehicle, you just hitch it? Because
yeah,
that's the way the future
is. I don't think they're going to be selling these to you know, to people anytime soon. But yeah, I would love to take one of these for a little spin. And when I say take, I mean you know, sit in the back and read a book. Well. The robot is ferrying my family around.
We've got some more self-driving news in a moment. But first, Facebook is all about video. If you hadn't heard, if you've logged into Facebook, you've probably seen a ton of video there. Now it's all about video ads, according to sources who say that mid-roll video ads are expected to be tested on the platform soon. Facebook will sell the ads and then share the revenue with publishers, giving them a 55% take on that amount. And that's actually the same split that YouTube has. So they're in good company as far as that's concerned. But are you missing ads in your Facebook feed? And are you happy to know that they might be interrupting your videos?
I mean, we have ads already.
At the beginning,
right?
Yeah, pre-roll.
Yeah, in the middle of the videos. And not so much that, but just the fact that some of that money would be going to the creator of the video, for example, possibly us. I mean, we put videos up on Facebook. I mean, we have a separate advertising, but you can imagine, I mean, for up until this time, Facebook has been doing nothing, paying nothing for all of the content that you create, like whether it's just, you know, a post about what you had for lunch or a funny video that you took of your dog or something that, you know, like I'm saying, like us putting our videos that we produce up on Facebook. Facebook's been doing nothing for that. It's all just come to them. And so this is very, might be a turning point if this really happens, where they're going the YouTube model and paying the creators 55%, which is a lot, for what they're putting up on Facebook. And I don't know if people are going to like that. I mean, Facebook viewers, and I don't know if it's going to work. Bloomberg says that Facebook makes a third more money than YouTube per user. Mm-hmm. So it's not like the YouTube model has been so much more wildly successful than Facebook has. So I'm not really sure what they're trying to do here. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if I see a video of my niece, you know, in her ballet recital, is that going to have a video, you know, an ad in it? I don't know.
If it's longer than 90 seconds, then possibly so. Because
people
I think
get to choose, right? Because if I put personal videos on YouTube, I don't monetize, you know, I don't monetize my videos that I put up there.
Right.
But I mean, I know people who do, you know. So.
And are they creating just like random, like, here's a slice of my life, probably only get 20 views ever in the history of the video, but I'm monetizing
I think you have to have a certain amount of views.
You must have to. Yeah. So I wonder if that applies here too.
Probably.
You know, probably a certain grade, a certain level of people putting videos up. Ads would interrupt at the 20-second mark. It sounds like it's kind of finalized at just that point. So long enough for you to know whether you want to actually watch the rest of that video. 20 seconds is probably a pretty good point to put that. I'm happy that it's standardized in that regard and it isn't just somewhere randomly throughout the course of the video. Because, I mean, I have to say that my least favorite video ad is the one that suddenly interrupts in the middle of your video. You're watching something and then suddenly randomly out of nowhere, it pauses, does a little swirly ball loady thing, and then throws the ad on the screen and then stops, pauses, and then puts you right back in the middle of wherever it was you were in the middle. So at least with a 20-second mark, you might have some sort of inclination that it was coming.
Well, I also think the 20-second mark is because there will only be ads in videos that people really are going to watch.
Right, exactly. Like, at that point, you've like established your intent to watch the rest of the video.
And more than just, you know, Facebook has gotten in trouble before because they'll be scrolling, you know, if they're auto-playing, like I could be scrolling. I'm not actually watching that video that mm-hmm. I scrolled right through, but I might take 3 or 4 seconds to scroll past it, even though I'm not watching it. So, you know, and they won't pay enough. Except if people are going to be watching at least 20 seconds.
They should put it at 2 seconds and they make a lot more money, mm-hmm. you know, because then everyone even accidentally would get ads. Don't do that.
We should put our ads every 2 seconds. That would be
every
really...
2 seconds.
You guys would like that? Let us
yeah,
know.
Yeah, totally. TNT at twit.tv.
You know those prototypes that Razer showed off at CES last week? Project Valerie, the laptop with 3 screens that extend out like robot arms, and Project Ariana that extends games out onto the walls of your living room. They were fantastic. Apparently, we are not the only people that thought they were fantastic. Two of these prototypes were stolen from CES, from the show floor, according to a Facebook post by Razer CEO Min Lang Tan. 2 prototypes were stolen, but the Razer is not saying which prototypes they were, so they're not saying whether they were the robot arms or the onto the screen, onto your walls projector. We don't know which ones. And this isn't the first time that prototypes have been stolen from Razer. They were also stolen in 2011. The Razer Blade was stolen at that point too. So
yeah, they actually came out a little bit later. So pretty recently they'd put out an update. So it was in fact the 2 Razer Project Valerie laptop prototypes.
The robot arms.
So the three screen laptops, essentially. They were taken from the press room around 4 p.m. on Sunday, and they're offering a $25,000 reward that leads to the arrest or conviction of whoever took it.
You know, Sam Moscovich really liked those. I mean, I'm just saying.
He doesn't need this because this is like limited. You know, this is like surround limited to like 3 screens. He's like all in on VR, which is like everywhere.
Maybe you were in it together.
No, but Burke has a very interesting theory. He's putting up
the Burke camp.
Padre.
I've
not seen Padre. I do not know if he has a magical 3-screen laptop with him. But if he does, I will want to see it first because it looks really cool. And then we'll turn him in.
Brian was also with Padre, and Brian went very quickly to the Burke camp.
Wait a minute.
I can neither confirm nor deny that Padre may have a 3-screen Razer, but the booth was really nice. It was one of the cooler CES things that we saw.
Did you get a chance to actually see the 3-screen laptop? What did you think?
It looked really cool, but it was behind glass when I saw it, so it was protected. You know? But actually, you know what? Padre did almost steal one of the laptops, not on purpose. What we did is we went to the booth and Padre picked up one to look at. And the guy came over and said, hey, if you leave the area, we're going to have to like arrest you, basically. Like, don't take that.
That warning was not extended to the person who took these two.
Legal at RazorZone.com for tips. Just saying.
If you know, help Razor out. Hook a Razor up. Huh?
And it's a $25,000 reward, too. Yeah. So, yeah. Damn.
Well, they see it as industrial espionage. So they
like, our stuff's really cool. We get it. We get it. But don't steal our secrets. Mm-mm. That's just kind of what they're saying. Okay, back to self-driving car. I could have reorganized this differently than I did, but whatever. I'm sure at some point news that a car company is prepping a self-driving model will be nothing special, but now is not that point. At the Detroit Auto Show, Volkswagen showed off the VW ID Buzz concept to its microbus into the 21st century with a fully electric version that includes full self-driving capabilities. The bus, you get it, bus, can accelerate from 0 to 60 miles per hour in 5 seconds. So the old version of this was historically a pretty slow-moving beast. This is a little bit faster, 0 to 60 in 5 seconds. Range of 270 miles on a charge. VW says they are making electric mobility the new trademark of the company. And I guess there's an electric motor in the front, in the back. It's all-wheel drive. The driver's seat inside can rotate 180 degrees to face the back, because if it's, you know, capable of full self-driving mode, you could dock the steering wheel into the dash and then turn around and play cards with, you know, your friends.
Or turn around and say, don't make me pull this car over.
Don't make me tell the car to pull over and watch as it does it itself.
Right. I mean, that, yeah. Like, for someone with little kids, that's awesome. You just turn around and slap them. I mean, no, I'm just kidding. Don't slap them. I love the modular seating in this. Besides just the outside, I'm a big fan of the VW bus in general.
I know, it's cool looking.
But they say they'll start building it this year, but it's a concept still. And right. VW has made concept cars before that they've never made. There was the VW Bully, which kind of looked a little bit like this and then never got made. So I'm not counting my chickens.
Yeah. So their goal is to release 30 electric or hybrid models by 2025. Apparently that's the result. You know, we heard a lot about this VW emissions, rating, diesel emissions scandal that was in the news, I think last year, possibly the year before. So this effort came out of that. 2020 is expected to be the launch of VW's electric offensive. Put that in air quotes, because those are their words, electric offensive. So who knows? By then, maybe we'll see one of these futuristic buzzes, on the road. I think it looks really cool. I would love to have one of these things.
Well, I like the picture where it shows the person kind of sitting in the driver's seat holding the steering wheel. Like, the idea that you could still steer it around.
Wait a minute. That's unprecedented. Steering a car? Why would you want to do that?
I mean,
there's even pedals
in
this thing.
Yeah.
What do you need pedals for?
No.
Look.
Yeah.
That's a weird looking steering wheel, though.
The same sort of old fashioned, you know, VW thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Steering. Pedals.
Whatever.
After the break, we'll talk to Stephen Hackett from 512 Pixels about the 10th birthday of the iPhone. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, the sponsor of this episode. Now, in my house, we're trying to decide, do we remodel, make it bigger, add another bedroom, or do we move into a new house? We haven't decided yet, but either way, we'll either have to get a new mortgage in a new house or refinance. And that means we have to find a mortgage lender. It's the most important person to work with, and you want to work with someone that you trust and someone who has your best interest in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you'll get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. Don't waste time searching through stacks of paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial info to get a mortgage approval in minutes. You can even adjust the rate and the length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the mortgage solution that's right for you. So whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. I know anyone who's listening to this likes to do things online. They don't like to leave their house. They don't like to put on pants. You don't have to do that. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Go completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. On January 9th, 2007, exactly 10 years ago today, Steve Jobs stood on the stage at the Moscone Center and announced a widescreen touch-enabled iPod, an Apple-designed mobile phone, and an internet communications device.
Are you getting it?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, you getting it? Yeah, just like that.
Uh-huh. Oh, I remember that. Memories. I remember that.
They were all in one package. Yes, are you getting it? The iPhone, here to talk about where we've been and where we're going, is Stephen Hackett from 512 Pixels and Relay FM. Welcome back to the show, Stephen.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
So where were you 10 years ago when the iPhone was announced?
Where I was.
Yeah, I was actually offline visiting family in like rural North Carolina. And I remember coming back to cell phone service and just all my nerd friends going crazy in my text messages saying, you've got to see this thing. And so I remember, you know, getting like my laptop on dial up in my aunt's house and like trying to load these Apple.com pages, you know, very large images, very heavy web pages, and just trying to absorb everything I could. It wasn't until a little bit later I actually saw the keynote, which of course is now so famous. But I just remember reading those and like texting with friends thinking like, this is crazy.
Now, you said you were a retail employee. Were you an Apple retail employee or just a retail employee?
I was, yeah. So I was at Apple retail for the first two iPhones. So I worked the iPhone launch, which of course, you know, is in June, which was just as bananas as you think it is. But so yeah, I was an Apple store employee then. And I remember just in the days after, people coming in and like just wanting to know things about it. And we, you know, we didn't only knew what was on the website, right? They don't tell us anything in advance. And so people are asking all these like detailed questions. I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, unless it's on the website, I can't answer your question.
It must feel good now being an Apple podcaster, so you can like make all kinds of crazy predictions of what's coming.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, the thing about predictions is if you're wrong, they just kind of go away. But if you say something crazy and you're right, then you earn a gold star.
Exactly. So I saw online that you charged your original iPhone. Does it keep a charge still?
It does not. So that I took a couple pictures with it, and the battery basically lasted long enough to do that. And since last time I powered it on, it reboots on its own every like 30 seconds, which, you know, trying to like use image capture to pull the pictures off. It was just a real frustrating like 15 minutes of my life. But, it still feels good in the hand. That's the thing that blows me away. Like it's so small and it's thick, but it still feels good in the hand. I think that first design really was a winner.
Do you wish you had an iPhone that was that small now?
No, I switched to the Plus, and there are days that I look at it and wish it was bigger. I'm firmly planted in the Plus club myself, but there's something kind of charming about this original design.
I was trying to go back and gonna go back in time, trying to go back in time, to like try and see what the smartphone landscape was then. Smartphones, were we even calling them smartphones then? We probably were, but anyways, all the competition seemed to have, most of it anyways, had hardware keyboards. Obviously the iPhone comes out and it's full screen touchscreen. So I mean, obviously that's one huge influence that the iPhone had over the market. Do you think that was one of the most important influential features, or are there other features that the original iPhone had that, I mean, you know, looking back over the past 10 years, like what's at the top of that list?
I think that's definitely towards the top of the list. You know, during his keynote, Jobs kind of pokes fun of the other guys saying, you know, what happens if you have a good idea in 6 months, you can't go around and add a button to all these things. But I really think that the heart of the iPhone has always been its software. And you look at the demo and even, you know, running early versions of iOS, so much further ahead than what, you know, Palm was doing or Microsoft was doing. These other companies were taking sort of desktop ideas and shrinking them down to mobile. I mean, Windows Mobile even had a tiny little start menu you had to tap with a stylus. It's bananas. With the iPhone, they sort of started over. They said, what makes sense in a mobile environment? What makes sense when you can touch it? And everything was built around that idea. They weren't married to the old user interface or the old user experience ideas. And I think that's really what set it apart you know, it'd be another year before it got third-party apps. It would be a couple years before the camera got good. But that initial software was just so much fun and has so much liveliness to it because it was designed for touch first. I think that's what really what set it apart.
And I think in some ways, Apple's still doing that. I mean, they're still, you know, very resistant to the idea of combining iOS with macOS, whereas, you know, Windows is really full on, you know, everything is Windows, everything is the same. They're holding on to that. Do you think it still makes sense for Apple to hold so tightly to the different OSs for touch and non-touch?
I think it does. I think, you know, we've seen them bring them closer together with like OS X Lion bringing a lot of ideas from iOS back to the Mac. Obviously, we have a lot of things that are shared and common now. But I think the user experience is just so different. If your hands are on a keyboard and a mouse, it's just fundamentally different than touching and, you know, scrolling with your finger and things like pinch to zoom. I don't know if macOS and iOS will always be separate, but I do think that as long as the Mac is still driven from an interface that's not touch, that, you know, I've got a 27-inch iMac in front of me. I don't want to reach up and touch it all day. But if that day ever comes, then I think that conversation would potentially be more interesting.
So you write today that, you know, you still remember poring over John Gruber from Daring Fireball. You still remember poring over his notes. What do you remember at that time that was interesting to you about his thoughts on the iPhone?
He spent a lot of time talking again about the software and about the responsiveness of it. You know, I got to spend time with an iPhone. By the time it was released, I was a Mac genius. And so I was training on the iPhone the day before it came out. And so we got to spend some time with it and obviously in the store before we opened it up to the masses. And what I was struck immediately, I think really was echoed in what John was writing, that this thing just, it feels like magic. And that's overused, especially in the Apple ecosystem. But the fact that you can just scroll something and the content keeps up with your finger. You know, we were coming from a world where that just wasn't true on mobile devices. Even an iPod was obscured away through the click wheel. And so just to have a little piece of glass that could become anything it needed to be, and that it was so responsive and that it was fun to use, you know, that's something that I think people didn't really understand until they got their hands on it. I think John understood that. And so, you know, reading his first day impressions after getting to spend time with it myself, that's really what I walked away with, that it was fun to use. And, you know, it was simple and it was basic, but it had a quality about it. It had a little spark of life in it that I hadn't, you know, I definitely didn't have in the palm that I was carrying at the time.
I found it interesting kind of reading through John Gruber's first kind of interactions with the iPhone and everything. One thing that I noticed on user interface, the very first thing he says is the high resolution screen is gorgeous. Helvetica yeah. has never, ever looked so good on screen. And what's interesting, I mean, history, you know, looking back, and especially when you're talking about this highly competitive space that we're in with smartphones and all that kind of stuff. History is just so brutal in this regard, right? Like resolution on the original iPhone, 320 by 480, 163 pixels per inch. Now you've got 1920 by 1080, 401 pixels per inch. Things are truly much sharper now than they were there. 2 megapixel rear-facing camera, which 2 megapixel feels like a toy spec. You know, it feels like bottom of the bed. That's, you know, you get more on your front-facing camera on even lower-end phones in the Android world, at least, than you did on the rear-facing camera. So obviously, you know, a lot has changed over the years. It's just cool to see how much things changed in 10 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I was looking through some photos, and I took one today with the original iPhone, and like, you can tell what it is, but the detail is just not there. And
yeah.
You know, it's always funny to compare, like, you know, my Apple Watch has more power than the Apollo spacecraft. You know, time makes things funny in a way.
Yes, it does.
And today we get to, you know, kind of all as a community, not just me interested in Apple history, but as a community get to kind of reflect on this. And you're absolutely right. It, you know, by today's standards, it's not much to look at. But at the time, it was the highest resolution display Apple had ever shipped.
Yeah.
And it really, I mean, it really felt like you were looking at a printed page almost.
Mm-hmm. Well, today in iOS today, Leo held up the original iPhone next to his iPhone 7 Plus. And, you know, I mean, just to the naked eye, it doesn't really look that different. Like it's not, you know, it's not that different. The numbers tell us differently, but Mm-hmm. So what's next? Do you see, I mean, a lot of people have been talking about the AirPods as being like, oh, you know, and you actually on your podcast, you were talking about how this just reminds you again how Apple can really create a product. Do you have faith in Apple, or do you think that they're slipping a little bit?
I have faith in them. I think that Apple will wait and see what the market is doing and interrelate. They did that with music players. They did it with wearables to a lesser degree, and they definitely did it with the smartphone. There were lots of things out before the iPhone. But usually when Apple enters a market, they do so with humble beginnings. You know, this iPhone keynote, they wanted to have 1% of market share. With the iPod, they're like, hey, we're making a music player. It's Mac only. You have to have FireWire. It's not a very big market, but we're gonna explore this. I think where I will begin to get worried is if there are mature markets that Apple hasn't entered and they seem uninterested. You know, I think the Alexa and like the Google Home, the sort of voice assistants, that's one that I want Apple to make a move at some point soon. I think they will with Siri. But, you know, there are these markets that sort of come and go, and Apple is happy to kind of sit back and take a more thoughtful approach. And if that changes, then I'll be worried. Like, that's the DNA of Apple, is to see what the markets are doing and see how they can improve on it. And I think that has served them really well for a really long time. And until they move away from that playbook, then I'm not going to lose any sleep.
Well, Stephen Hackett is an amazing podcaster. I love Connected. You do many podcasts. One, I love Connected with Federico Viticci and Mike Hurley. I come for the Apple news and I stay for all the accents, and they're fantastic. And he is at 512 Pixels and at ISMH on Twitter. Thanks so much for joining us, Stephen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. All right. Henry from Livonia, Michigan, wrote in to tell us how he uses Alexa in the car. He says, I use an IXCC multi-port car charger, 50 watts, 10 amps, 5 USB ports, high capacity smart cup holder. I use the Wi-Fi hotspot on my phone to make it all work. You know, no big deal.
Well, that's only $16. That's okay. I thought it was actually going to be a cup holder as well, but it just fits holder.
Yeah, so it keeps it, keeps it from rattling around and everything, and keeps it stationary, I suppose. So, yeah, I mean, that's a low cost way to do it, I suppose.
Yeah, I haven't tried that. And we also, I got another more extended email about using a Wi-Fi hotspot, not your phone hotspot, but another one. And Zach Edison from San Rafael recommended using your Wi-Fi hotspot. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this Echo in the car. I don't know exactly why I need it, but I want it.
But you can. And you could try it out and see if you need to have it in more of a full-fledged way. I think the downside, personally, like for my own like convenience in looking at this as something that you can try to do this regularly on like day in, day out, the way, let's say, a head unit that had that just built in and mm-hmm. it was the way it is when you turn your car on, it lights up and it has it, is just the fact that you have to turn on your Wi-Fi hotspot every time. And that's just one extra thing you have to do when you get inside. Maybe there's some way to automate that, though. Like, I know in Android, there are ways to automate things based on, you know, if there's an RFID, you know, sticker placed in your car mount for your phone. And when it reads that, it kicks off a script that then says, okay, turn on hotspot, let's say, as one example. Maybe there's a way to do that so that it's as seamless as get in the car, put my phone in the thing, and it lights up, as opposed to like getting in, having to go through your settings, turn it on, and move on.
You could leave your hotspot. You can't leave your hotspot on all the time?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I can on my iPhone.
On your phone? Well, no. On your phone? Yeah, you probably could.
Yeah.
You're just going to burn a lot of battery doing that, right? Because that's a lot of extra kind of stuff happening
that's
in the background.
The thing with these iPhones, there's battery to spare.
Batteries for days. I don't even have to think about this. Well, coming up, the great phone swap of 2017 is upon us. But first, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron. They are the sponsor of this episode. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card, as well as pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. So you're going to save time. You're going to save money. When you're shopping at the grocery store, it's 60% more expensive than what you get through Blue Apron. If you spend a lot eating out, which you are if you're eating out all the time, or at high-end grocery chains, you can now spend under $10 per person for a healthy home-cooked meal. Customize your recipes every week. That's based on your own dietary preferences. You can set those all up with Blue Apron. You can choose a delivery option that fits your needs. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental U.S. and sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S. Blue Apron not only supports a more sustainable food system, it supports happy and healthy families. Cooking together actually builds strong family bonds, and research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often. New recipes are created every week by Blue Apron's culinary team. They're not repeated within a year, so you can get spicy shrimp and Korean rice cakes with cabbage, pork chops and garlic piccata with scallion rice and spinach, mushroom and chipotle pepper. That's right up my alley. Enchiladas with lime sour cream, all that and a whole lot more. Check out this week's menu to see what's on tap. And you can get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. We thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today.
TNT's fan of the day is Chris Handy, who sent us this picture on Twitter saying, "I'm a huge fan of the Twit Network. Great for when I'm working. Favorites include MacBreak Weekly and Tech News Today."
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, it appears you are some kind of musician.
Yeah, you got a little nice audio hardware mm-hmm. stack on the right side there. You got a keyboard controller. Nice setup.
Yeah, excellent. I imagine that a lot of what we say inspires music.
It's like Altbaba. Oh, yeah. Altbaba. Altbaba.
Yeah, compose us an Altbaba song.
Altbaba. I don't even know how to get it right anymore. Where are we?
Yeah, show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just use the hashtag how I watch TNT. Put it up on the internet. We'll find it.
Yeah, we'll look for it. I need to do some more digging. We have a bunch, but I need to look at a bunch of other places I haven't tapped there. Really, I'm just putting off the inevitable. Many moons ago, Megan and I teased on this very show that someday we would totally switch phones for a month to see what it's like on the other side. I've only ever really used an Android smartphone in my day-to-day. Megan, you've used a Samsung phone before.
And an HTC phone as well, which I believe is an Android phone. Yes.
Yeah, likely, I would imagine.
Yes, I think I think I went from the Palm Pre maybe to the HTC One. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay.
I can't remember anything past 3 years ago.
But you had the Pre in your life. That's a...
Oh, I did. Yes. Well, because I didn't have an iPhone for a long time because I had Sprint and I was stubborn. I didn't want to change... didn't want to change from Sprint, and Sprint didn't have iPhones for many moons.
Right.
So yeah. I pretended like I disliked all the people that used iPhones, like you do out there, those people that make fun of us who use iPhones. I know it's pretend.
I don't do that, but somebody out there does. So now the time's come.
It's time.
So what have we done? I have my Google Pixel. This is the Pixel XL. This is their top of the line, Google's top of the line. If you haven't heard of it, mm-hmm. it's a really nice phone. It's running Android Nougat.
Okay.
Make sure and call it Nougat.
Okay.
Because that's what it's actually called.
Okay.
At least that's what Hiroshi Lockheimer from Google told us on All About Android. But it's a nice limited edition blue color. So
I've always wanted blue.
There you go. And it's fully wiped. And it has a little case on it. So, you know, if you drop it, it may or may not break. I don't know.
Okay. But so anyways, I don't get to text your wife as you.
No, you're going to start over as you.
Okay.
I have a feeling tonight is going to be full of like messages back and forth. Like, how do I blah, 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 blah. Yeah. You just do this. How do I blah, 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 blah. Anyways, what am I getting?
I have the
what
iPhone 7 completely wiped. See how it says hello? Oh no. I forgot what the password is, so I guess you can't have
Uh-oh.
It.
Uh-oh.
Boop, 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 boop. Yeah, it says hello, welcomes you.
Wait a minute, it needs a password in order to get to settings?
Well, no, I got nervous because all of a sudden I realized no one could contact me, and so then I started going through, and then I backed up.
I gotcha.
I'll tell you what the password
is. Okay, we'll just wipe
We'll wipe it again.
Okay.
So it's the iPhone 7 Plus. Uh-huh. Beautiful camera. It's got a camera on the front for your selfies.
Oh.
It's got two cameras. I know you'll enjoy the...
Sorry, I just booted it up.
I know you'll enjoy everything about it. As I've said before in the show, his name is Matt because he's Matt Black. And I have a blue case on it because, I want the blue. I want the blue iPhone.
Okay.
I'm not going to. I sent it to Chinese so that it's even more complicated.
Great, you really set me up for success here. Thanks a lot, Megan. I appreciate it.
And then also, what it comes with is this beautiful Apple Watch.
Oh, I didn't realize we were bringing these in today.
Yeah.
I've got a Moto 360 first generation. Do you want to use that one?
Well, let's just start with the phone. Space 2 can be the watch. Because I do have the men's size watch. It is pink, but I mean, it's rose gold.
That's okay. So I can rock pink.
Yeah,
you
can.
Okay, so how do we do this officially? Do we...
Yeah, I really did send mine. Okay, yeah, here.
Something like that?
Here, yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Okay.
Yours has a lot of finger marks on it.
Yours doesn't have any.
I know. I cleaned it.
But we have to put the SIM cards in there, right?
Yeah, we'll do that. Okay. We'll do that offline. We don't have to do the
show. Okay, let's go. Welcome to have Pixel XL.
Yeah, there's a lot of steps.
Okay,
we'll go over it. Although, actually, no, you should do it yourself. And if you need help,
yeah,
if you'd like help, you just let me know.
Okay,
that way we get the full experience. This is going to be a weird month. So we're doing this for a month.
A month. I'm going to do Android for a month. I still have my iPad. You still probably have some.
Well, the reality is we do shows on this network that involve us actually using the phone that we don't have anymore. So I have Android phones that I can use on those shows for those needs. But basically what this means for me anyways is that my day-to-day in my pocket everywhere I go is going to be the iPhone for the next month.
And yes, I have an iPhone 6 at home that I'll use only for the show, but this will be mine and I'm going to do the best to live my life with this Pixel phone.
Live it.
I think I can do it. I'd use a lot of Google products. I think you can do it too.
I'm looking forward to this.
If you have
suggestions. I've wanted to do this for a long time just to get an idea of what it's like because we talk about this stuff all the time. So
yeah.
I should know.
Yes. And if you have suggestions, maybe you're an Android user and you've been wanting to recommend things to me that are only on Android, please do that. Megan at twit.tv.
And yeah, you can find me on Twitter or whatever at Jason Hell, or you know how email works here. Just Jason at twit.tv, sure, whatever. But yeah,
you gave away your email address. Well,
it's pretty easy to figure out. You do it every day on this show, whatever.
So what is the first thing you're going to do with that iPhone? Like, what have you always wanted to do with an iPhone that you haven't been able to do on an Android?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I mean, I think that iPhones historically, at least beyond iPhone 1 and iPhone 2, have been known for really great camera performance, and I take a lot of pictures. So I'm very curious to kind of see what my experience is in my day to day, taking pictures of like my kids, which are the fastest moving targets I ever take pictures of, and so usually the biggest challenge for taking pictures with my phones has been taking pictures of them. So that also kind of exploring the app store a little bit, kind of see if there's some things in there that you can't get on Android that and want to know why, you know, what the I don't know what it's all about. What about you?
I am excited for Google to be all up in my business because that's what I miss about Android. Like I used to, with Google Now, I used to say like, you're late for this. It was much better at knowing exactly what I was doing when I didn't always have to tell it. Like it would get that information from my Gmail or, you know, different parts. Like it really knows things that I need to know. Whereas I think the iOS is more, you have to tell it more. I'm excited to use the Google Assistant.
Assistant, right?
Yeah. Well, Assistant and then, you know, okay, Google.
Oh, that thing.
Yeah. Because Siri, as I've said, is garbage.
Okay, cool. Well, I can't wait to see how much garbage Siri is.
But you can also use the Google Assistant on there.
Oh, okay.
I will tell you the password.
Okay, good. We'll figure that out. Burke does have something to say, though, and I think it's... to put me to call me to task for the amount of phones that I have broken. Burke says he will break it, the screen. which I think that I'm happy that you clarified the screen because at least the phone will still work.
Yeah, you have broken a lot of phones, whereas I've broken none. But
there's always a first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. There we go. We're going to do this. We'll tell you all about it. I'm sure we'll have plenty to say over the coming weeks. Real quick, we heard from the many of you who wanted a Twit store, and it's up. It's live. The new Twit store is open. Check out new designs. Brought back some popular favorites. We're kind of rotating things through. We'll be adding show-specific gear and new designs every week. Visit twit.tv/store to get in on the action there and to check out the new designs and everything. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
And if you want to subscribe to the show, go to twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director, Brian. Appreciate it. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today and all of your handy pointers and tips as we switch phones. We'll talk to you all tomorrow. See you guys.